It's May 22nd, 2009. I'm Mike Benedetti.
And this is Brendan Mellican.
How are you?
And this is 508, the show about Worcester. Possibly this week is going to be on television also.
Exciting
maybe on
stuff.
With a fishing channel or something. It's not sure to me. So if you have any complaints, do not complain to the station. You can email pieandcoffee@gmail.com and complain to us there and send your legal threats and whatever. Brendan, how's it going?
Excellent. How are you?
Good. Do you have any top stories for the week?
Top stories? No, I don't have any top stories. I did notice something just before I left the house in the Telegram today, though, that I thought was kind of funny. There was a little article, looked like mostly filler, about the recent Supreme Court decision on search and seizures for vehicles post-arrest.
Right.
And there was just a funny comment from Chief Sluckis from Auburn, who has made some funny comments in the past regarding, federal decisions and how they play out, or, state-level decisions and how they play out for local law enforcement. But he had an interesting comment about the officer safety in regards to the Supreme Court decision regarding search and seizure of a vehicle after arrest, and how, from his perspective, it's pretty much an irrelevant decision. He'd rather see evidence thrown out in court if it promoted officer safety. It just seemed like a really bizarre thing to state. I mean, if we consider that the whole point of law enforcement and public safety surrounds the existence of the Constitution, willfully disobeying, the Constitution in order to promote officer safety seems like just simply doing it wrong. It was just kind of a funny way to wrap up an article where you essentially had the majority of law enforcement in the state saying, yeah, this decision makes sense, and it's pretty much in line with the way we do business in Massachusetts anyways, where our laws are a little bit more stringent in regards to search and seizure. But here you had this one chief saying, yeah, we can completely ignore the Constitution if it means people are going to be safe. It sounds kind of grim, but the reality is that the importance of the Constitution is somewhere higher than both officer safety and the safety of citizens as well. I mean, that's kind of the whole point.
You're like, but people are like willing to go to war, for example,
over
the Constitution.
Right, exactly.
People are willing to endanger public safety to a pretty extreme extent over the Constitution.
It's kind of the whole point, So, unfortunately, sometimes we do have to take hits to both the safety of the citizenry as well as the safety of officers to uphold the very thing that gives us a reason to have public safety in the first place. End rant.
There you go. Well, I'm always glad to see public officials going out on a limb for no real reason. That's nice. I wanted to make the case that there may be a short-lived vegetarian renaissance in Worcester. Short-lived meaning 2 to 3 weeks.
Really?
This is my argument. So here's this week's Worcester Magazine. And there's an article in here, I don't know if you saw this, by my strong soul brother, Drew Wilson. See, in the audio version, you just hear the pages turn, but now you can see the pages turn. Yeah, it's called Top Places in Worcester for a Vegan Date. It includes the Q Cafe. Do you ever go to the Q?
I have actually never been to the Q.
I don't think it caters to your demographic.
What is my demographic? Guys who don't iron their shirts when they're going to be on video.
I think younger people than you or I.
I look young. I still get carded for cigarettes.
Yeah. Nancy Chang's, the food cart at the dive bar, the dive bar and the food cart at the dive bar, the park on Pleasant Street, the Winslow Park, and Udipi plus the bean counter.
What exactly about the park on Winslow Street makes it a vegan destination?
Vegan, it could be a vegan date spot because you could go to Ed Hyder's Market and Banan's Market and go over there.
But you wouldn't be like eating the lawn.
No. You wouldn't actually. You would just be eating there. You would be having a picnic there, though. Also, Patriot Pizza there. There's rumors that they're toying around with having some sort of vegan pizza. So that could actually be like the vegan epicenter.
You're talking. You're pointing this at me, and it's totally throwing me off.
I know. So, and then the other reason why there's arguably will be a 2 to 3 week vegan renaissance is this is the Worcester Vegetarian Dining Guide. This is just like a test version. The real version is going to be glossy in color. but this is also going to be widely distributed in the city.
And do you think that's going to be a hit?
I don't know. I feel like in a city...
Why does the Vegetarian Dining Guide have a 9 pictures of farm animals on the front of it?
These are things you'll be missing.
These are things that look awfully tasty to me.
Business Vegetarian Dining Guide.
Yeah.
I don't think it has to be a hit. I was talking to one of the people listed in there last night, and I said, you know, here you are, for what it's worth. Here's you know, you're in this little pamphlet. And he said, it just takes a couple of people. He said, you know, if I get a couple more people a week, I will notice that.
Well, what's nice is when you do have that couple of people who are actually circulating amongst restaurants, and it gives restaurants where they do want to actually have vegan or vegetarian items on the menu justification to keep them there. Because there's nothing more frustrating. I live with a vegetarian. There's nothing more frustrating than seeing a restaurant where you can tell that they would really like to have vegetarian offerings on the menu, but they don't, simply because they don't, you know, see much call for them.
Yeah.
And then when somebody orders something or tries to adjust an item to fit a dietary restriction, it almost becomes a hassle. And you can kind of tell that they would rather have items on the menu that fit that demographic, but there up to now doesn't seem to have been a huge call for it. So
yeah, this is actually one thing. I like living in a larger city than Worcester, is that you can go to like a hip there are hip restaurants around here. You should keep this for the vegetarian in your life. there are hip restaurants around that will have explicitly vegan stuff on the menu,
right,
as well as like veal,
right?
So everyone can sit down and everyone can like silently judge everyone else, but they can all like eat together.
Yes.
And that's the way it should be.
Silent judgment.
That's the key here. Have you seen the we actually got a comment. Tiny computer. We got from the Heinrich Report website about last week's podcast, where we talked about the Telegram and Gazette. Did you read this comment?
I read the comment, and I read through the majority of what was available on the blog. Some really great writing that I'm kind of surprised I hadn't stumbled across this one before. It was some really good stuff.
Yeah.
A little odd in the sense that parts of it almost seem to be performance art, where you've got this gentleman who has adopted a character, and I'm not going to even try and attempt to pronounce the ridiculous name, but it seems as though he was a caller at one point in time to...
Diane Williamson's talk show,
where he took up a sort of a Colonel Klink sort of persona for the show, and has, you know, turned that into his blog. He doesn't write like Colonel Klink would speak, but interesting stuff, and a pretty good take on the city overall. He doesn't really seem to like anybody, which is refreshing. You know, being able to removing any sort of a bootlicker context from the conversation, and just really seeming to appreciate the flaws of everybody.
I like the anonymous blogs that, you know, don't try to varnish the opinion.
Right.
I feel like in Worcester these have tended to just turn into just aimless bile.
Right.
Or degenerate into aimless bile, and I don't want to see this happen to this gentleman.
There are angry screeds, and my biggest problem with them is anytime one of them pops up, I seem to get barraged with emails from people who are demanding to know why I'm writing all of this stuff anonymously.
Right. Because on your blog, radioball.net, you just shy away from that kind of controversy.
Yeah, well, I mean, but the thing, that's kind of the whole point, is like I don't think I've ever really held back much on words, or I've tried not to, so to get blamed for other people's angry rantings, that's just not my style. That's not how I roll. You know,
there
I would much rather do things with a face attached to the words.
There you go. Well, also this week, this guy, or we'll link to this comment, because it's a long blog post. We'll link to this. He also talks about the so-called e-edition of the Telegram and Gazette, which, if you haven't seen it, here's the e-edition. I would describe this as a PDF, more or less, but with a different user interface. I guess you have to be online to use this. At least I'm switching to another page, and it has not successfully switched to the other page. I don't know. Anyway, just a slow PDF with a different user interface.
Have you tried this? I played around with it on Monday. We talked about it a bit on the WTAG show that I do on Monday nights.
Okay.
And It's nothing that I will ever use, but there's something about it that I think makes perfect sense, where it was only 2 or 3 weeks ago the Telegram ran a little story about internet demographics in general, pointing out how there is at least, it's about 45% of users fall into that baby boomer plus generation, and it trails off as people get older and what have you, but those are the people who are not as likely to be using, you know, feed readers for their news. They are going to feel the pain a little bit more when it comes to taking the paper out of their hands and trying to read something online, you know, holding their monitor and trying to flip the page with shaking the monitor. So for that demographic, this makes perfect sense. It would be nice, though, if the Telegram did something in parallel where they made, like, a great mobile version of their website.
Maybe if they made a proper river of news, like every other blog in the world.
A proper river of news, yeah. And, you know, it's probably 50% of my web browsing is done via my phone now. It would be great to have real access to the Telegram, and they don't seem to have really figured out either feeds properly or, you know, a good mobile version of the website. So while this, I think, makes perfect sense for a certain demographic, an aging demographic, this concept will probably die out just as quickly as the demand and need for good mobile content and good distributed content arises. So they seem to be getting it like half right, and, you know, kudos for getting half of it right, and I hope it works out and for charging for it, but there's still some other holes that need to be worked out in terms of content delivery.
Speaking of giving kudos to the Telegram and Gazette, I feel like we haven't complained about Worcester Magazine in a while, and I don't want to make people think that, like, we're losing our edge.
You know, we've been around in a while. So.
What? Well, also, hopefully we'll have Worcester Magazine news editor Scott Zoback on the show pretty soon, and I also don't want people to think that just because he's on this show that we've somehow decided to stop talking trash about Worcester Magazine.
We can make him come down here for the recording of the show, and we can just to prove to people that we're not being soft, we can throw him in the pond.
There you go. We're going to pawn Scott Zoback. I don't know what to say about Worcester Magazine. I'm really disappointed in what's going on with Worcester Magazine since the buyout, mostly because I don't see anything like new and dynamic in Worcester Magazine.
Well, I don't think a lot really changed. Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know how much that has to do with new ownership. It could very well have to do with transition in staff. I mean, I'm not privy to, you know, their inner workings enough to know what could be going on inside there.
This is the one thing we have to say about the weekly picks. This is like this indentation here. It really bothers me. I've never seen anything indented like these before. It's like there should be a bullet there, or there should be no indentation. It's like reverse indentation. What is that?
The one thing that I would similar to that is if you can find some place where they have star ratings for movies.
Goodness. The star ratings. No one can understand your star rating.
Look at this here. That layout for stars, it just makes zero sense. I don't know.
Basically, the stars come in left to right. Right. Or no, right to left.
Right to left, yes.
Which for an English language publication is not what people expect.
Yeah, there is no sense. I don't know if... It appears to me here that Mango is a one-star restaurant, which I don't think is what they're saying.
And it has no value. It's just nothing, no value at all.
And when you look at movies, it gets even more confusing because the stars then seem to...
We don't even know. Is it 3 stars? Is it 2 stars?
It could be. It depends which continent you're from.
We'll never know. So here's a theory. Here's a theory that I have. I'm going to put the camera on myself. Here's a theory that I have about one thing that they're doing, which is, like, I see this article, Top Places in Worcester for a Vegan Date.
Yeah.
This is, like, it's by Drew Wilson of VegWorcester.com. So this is, like, somebody writing about something which is a little bit quirky of a topic that they're personally very passionate about as a freelancer on a very rare occasion. Which to me says community newspaper. Which to me says, like, in a negative sense, In City Times.
Sure.
Which I kind of like this model for covering the city, to get back to the idea that we're a community newspaper, we're an alternative voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the best essays I ever read about the history of alternative newspapers, which I've sometimes linked to from pieandcoffee.org, made the comment that originally alternative newspapers were the kind of thing where it was no more prestigious to read it than to write for it.
Sure.
And it would actually be kind of interesting to see what if you do cast a wide net. What if you do have 50 people from different walks of life in the city writing something for you once a month, once every 2 months? You know, you're doing a little bit of editing, unlike say the In City Times. You know, you have a little bit. I mean, the In City Times is pretty willing has been pretty willing to run anything that you email to them.
Right.
I mean, what if you do just the give people a little bit of an assignment, a little bit of guidance,
yep.
and have a little bit of a more of a standard and more editing. InstaTime certainly doesn't edit anything.
That's something I've always been confused about with Worcester Magazine, because they do oftentimes advertise for freelancers, you know, the back pages and whatnot. And I'm sure they don't pay a ton and what have you. But if you're in a city like Worcester, where we have a lot of colleges, so we certainly have a lot of journalism students or you know, student people who are studying writing and what have you, you would think that people would be scrapping for any opportunity to write. Yet it does seem that more people will submit content probably for nothing to InCity Times than you would see in Worcester Magazine. And I don't know if that's because people view Worcester Magazine differently. You know, if they...
Oh, I think they view it very differently.
Which is unfortunate, because the circulation numbers are certainly higher, and if you right. wanted to have, you know, if you're looking to build a portfolio, you would think that you would want to put something for zero money in Worcester Magazine as opposed to InCity Times.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, though, if you think about who's in InCity Times, it's a relatively small collection of voices, right?
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
It's your John Monfredos and your Richard Schmidts.
But I think that is the place that you're more likely to see, you know, a screed or, you know, a rant or what have you. And I think any of those could be, like you said, with a little bit of guidance and a little bit of massaging and shoehorned into Worcester Magazine, and
right.
it would make the paper at least appear much more robust and more well-rounded and
right.
more representative of the community as a whole.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and you know, we know nothing about the inner workings of Worcester Magazine, so, you know, to the extent that this is a priority, we have no idea. Do they actually care about having more voices and, you know, a broader coverage in the paper? We have no idea. They may have other fish to fry. I want to talk about...
Can we get that crow to stop squawking? That's going to be interfering with the sound here.
It's a, we're here at Cook's Pond, by the way. Beautiful Cook's Pond. I wanted to talk about two more things, about underground shows and about stuff that people sent me on Facebook. Let me talk real quick about stuff people sent me on Facebook. Yesterday, I asked people, I said, what should we talk about on the show besides media criticism and my theory about vegetarianism in Worcester? And I got various comments. Last night at Worcester's hip night spot, Bocato, a beautiful young woman said, you need to do something about the pools. We'll do that next week. We'll have somebody on to talk about the pools. Bruce Russell yesterday on the phone,
mm-hmm.
Bruce the Snow Ghost Russell, occasional panelist on this program, said we should talk about the raising of taxes, which I'm totally unprepared to talk about the raising of taxes. I feel like the analysis that I've seen in the local media about the state raising its tax rate
mm-hmm.
recently, and just tax in general, I feel like this doesn't even scratch the surface of
it doesn't.
And what there, you need to talk about.
There seems to be a lot going on behind the scenes between local politics and the state delegation, where the representatives from the Worcester area at the state level really seem to want Worcester to figure out its own way before they expect any sort of handout from the state, which I think is a perfectly reasonable, you know, a reasonable way to approach things. There are plenty of changes that we can make on a local level that won't affect the state as a whole in terms of generating revenue. And you know, there's the libertarian streak in me always starts getting jittery when I start going down this road, but you know, I mean, property taxes, I think, are probably the place to start. If we look at, historically, that's been the third rail of Worcester politics, the idea of raising local property taxes on the residential side and trying to bring down the business taxes. And now we've got a group in Worcester, Worcester Citizens for Business, which are trying to do just that. They've got lawn signs going up and what have you.
Wait, where are these lawn signs?
I'm seeing them most up off of Barry Road, which is
okay.
leading me to believe that somebody on the organizational level is living up there. But they are nice signs. And you know, this year seems to be the year, if we were ever going to make a change to the residential tax base, I think this would be the year to do it. Because you know, anyone who owns a home in the city has probably noticed over the last 6 to 9 months, you've lost upwards of $100,000 in your assessment, in your home value. So in theory, what you're going to see for a tax rate, the rate won't change, but what you're going to see for an actual dollar figure for the taxes once the assessments come out next year is probably going to be putting us at late 80s, early 90s level for the local funding, which is going to be abysmal when it comes to local services, especially education. So now we have this opportunity where people are used to a certain dollar figure. That dollar figure is going to drop dramatically. And the result of that, you know, it's opening up this opportunity where we could raise the residential tax rate, at the same time drop the business tax rate, and not change much of anything, right? I mean, we could, the upside to that would be you would have local business, you would have, in theory, more businesses looking to come into the city because it would be a less expensive place to do business. And on the residential side, you would see people not even notice a difference from what the actual dollar amount that they paid in last year as opposed to next year would be. And I think that's a great example of where, you know, on the state level, people realize that there are changes that we can make locally that will lessen the need for any sort of handout or increased handout from the state in terms of local aid funding. And that's just one example of places that we can make changes in taxes. You know, at the state level, they're discussing vice taxes like sodas and what have you. And on the local level, we still haven't made any movement in terms of taking advantage of home rule charter changes to promote, you know, hotel taxes or meals taxes, which personally I'm not a big fan of, but there are at least conversations that we can be having that we seem not willing to have locally, which, you know, I wouldn't expect any movement on the state side until we do have those conversations.
Do you want to be on the show? I just want to mention that Drew Wilson of VegWister.com, who we've been talking about, is here. We just walked by.
Now we have to be nice.
In the middle of the woods. Unfortunately, we're rushing through these final topics on the show, so we have a couple more minutes. We'll bring you on. Otherwise,
never know who you're going to find in the woods.
that's so odd to have somebody creep up in the woods.
It was distracting as he was coming through this way.
Hey, you told me to come, Mike. It's not a total surprise.
It's like, what time is it? For the people of Worcester, we can confirm it's like 8:25.
Well, people are mowing their lawns, so it can't be that early.
I guess it's not that early. On the Facebook social networking system, people said we should talk about lack of a city public health department. We should talk about the mold and rodent hazard of abandoned and foreclosed buildings and dealing with that. We should talk about hospital overcrowding and caring for patients in the hallways of our hospitals. We should talk about violence increasing as the economy worsens. All of these are things that I will totally consider talking about on a show, not today.
Since you're discussing topics that came up via Facebook, can we talk about the idea of maybe us approaching a post-Facebook era in our history?
And talk about most and go on Twitter?
Oh, I don't know. I woke up this morning to an email inbox that was jam-packed with what was obviously a Trojan message that went through must have gone through the Facebook messaging system last night, and it was the subject line was hi, and then the message was click here, and it was a link to like sweet.be, I think was the URL. But what was interesting is this particular message was coming to me from at least six different friends that I have on Facebook, none of which are connected at all through themselves.
So they were just doing something on Facebook, which
you know, it's something that was infiltrating their contact list, which was then, you know, resending that same message to everyone to everyone on their contact list.
They probably installed some zombie type application, which.
Well, what was crazy was some of these messages were coming from, you know, prominent local businesses that use Facebook for messaging. It's like, wow, you know, nothing I like more than getting, you know, infected horribly. You know, my PC getting infected horribly from a business that I love giving money to. Which leads me to believe it's only going to be so long before you start seeing some, at least when it comes to corporate entities, some backlash in terms of using Facebook.
Which Facebook is, you know, they say MySpace is dead.
Well, as someone
Facebook will be dead in 18 months.
As someone who still checks in on their original Friendster account, you know, that I opened when it was still in beta and invite only, I think it's safe to say that these things come and go more quickly than they... they come around. They leave us very often, and Facebook probably on the way out.
Man, oh man. Well, I want to talk about one final thing as we're rushing through this, trying to stay in a TV-friendly time length. That yesterday I was talking to Matt Fox. I'll betray his confidence about the underground music scene in Worcester, meaning, you know, shows that are like done in a network of people's apartments and basements in the city, semi-public events, which I guess by zoning you're not really allowed to have a public event in your house. So these are technically, you know, violation of zoning. And whether or not it's like a good idea to talk to mainstream reporters about the scene, which is a very interesting scene. And to me, has been my main source of like good music. And I am like not someone who's in the punk scene. I'm a fellow traveler. I have a great love for the punk scene and the people in it and the values of the punk scene. It's never been like a meaningful part of my life, but it's something that I really enjoy, you know, being on the outskirts of as a weird middle-aged guy. And just talking about, well, you know, you probably shouldn't talk about these things necessarily in public a lot because you don't want to get people in right. trouble and busted or whatever. But one show coming up, though, that we wanted to mention, because, I was making that argument that you shouldn't talk about them. Matt Fox is making the argument that people want to know about these things. The idea of the scene is not to be exclusive and not to, you know, keep people out or say only a cool person can come to this.
Right.
Because, like, most of the people there are not cool by any standard definition of the word cool. That's kind of part of the idea. So he was like, how do you find out? How do you find out if you're in Worcester that there's this thing going on? And how do right. you get connected to it? So he actually pointed out that there's a show coming up on next Friday at the Firehouse, which is on Eastern Avenue, mm-hmm. That these people are happy to have bandied about in public. It's a fundraiser for Stone Soup. Mm-hmm. There should be some amazing bands, none of which I've heard of, none of which probably you've heard of, all of which I'm sure you'll enjoy. And these shows are just fantastic. I think the best document I know of any sort of Worcester house show is an episode of The Snow Ghost with Bones, the band Bone Zone from
yes,
last year,
that video.
Which I'll put on there. And this should be a larger venue with more bands, so it should be only 10 times better than that Snow Ghost video. But I just wanted to throw that out there for people who are, you know, people who are interested in music and have not yet found that little aspect of Worcester and seen if it's their thing.
That is always a interesting. A balancing act to walk. I remember there was one particular spot a couple years back that seemed particularly interesting, and through some mutual friends of ours, I was trying to link up a local journalist with some of the folks who were organizing that particular spot.
Was this the illegal skate park?
I won't say which one it was.
Okay.
But with the idea of saying, look, I'd love to bring let this guy get in here to take a look at it and write about not the place, like here's where I was and I'm going to ruin the whole thing for you, but write about the concept and the idea that there actually are great things happening underground, and if folks, especially, you know, college students and what have you, who are looking for things to do, if you open your eyes just a little bit more or put your ear a little bit closer to the ground, you may find more interesting things that won't leave such a terrible taste in your mouth regarding Worcester as a whole. And that idea was shot down with a giant heavy sledgehammer, you know, the idea of bringing someone who could possibly out this particular place.
Right.
Which I get, but it's one of those things that, you know, how do you get outsiders to know what's going on in the underground world if they're not underground with you?
Right.
But you do kind of need to. I mean, it's going to be kind of the point, right? You don't want something to flame out because of lack of interest with the people who are involved. It would seem almost better to have something explode and get shut down by becoming overly popular.
Right.
But, yeah, balancing act.
That's been this problem of Worcester spaces. They say for a long time, certainly in my time here, it's like the Spacement or the Worcester Artist Group was at the Sprinkler Factory, is that at some point, if something actually does well, there becomes this tension between either zoning and the people who run it or the landlord and the people who run it. This is actually the reason that they started Stone Soup, in part, was to say, here's a space which will be totally legitimate where we can do, this certain scene can do some things. And, you know, it burned down, but they're fixing to rebuild that. That's another story for another day. I want to wrap things up. We got about 2.5 minutes. Drew Wilson, thanks for being on the show.
Anytime.
This has been like a Dave Macheski level of involvement with Drew Wilson this week.
Thank you for providing the content.
Drew, do you got any 30, 40-second messages about stuff you're excited about? We talked about your article in the Worcester Magazine.
Neat. I hope it was all good. Yeah, I guess I'll see when the video comes out. But I'm excited about that column. It's going to be every month.
Yeah. Brendan, you got anything in our last 2 minutes?
Thanks for spending time with me chain smoking.
All right.
Yeah, and enjoy the weekend.
All right. Well, hey, everybody. Pieandcoffee@gmail.com is the place to send complaints. If you have legal threats, email me there, and I can send you a regular postal address.
We need to find a nice lawyer that will ante up some like pro bono work for us, just for the legal threats, that we can push them directly to someone instead of scratching our heads and trying to find those people after the fact.
You could also send us nice stuff. You could propose somebody to be on the show. One thing I should say actually at the end is, if you're running as a challenger for school committee or the city council, email us, pieandcoffee@gmail.com. We'll put you on the show. We'll give you 90 seconds to make your case. Why should we vote for you? This is Mike Benedetti. Thanks for watching, guys. Take care. Thank you.